Why, hello. We made it through an entire week without Carrie. I miss her. Hope she comes back soon. But I did it. I survived. I will survive. That would be a good song title. And look who's here to knock over my microphone like a big, giant turd face.
Hey, Chris, buddy. Feline invasion coming your way. Hit the floor, man. Hit the floor.
Anytime someone questions the fact, do I or don't I like the cat? I don't like the cat. So let's see. Coach Woodard's here. Hi, Coach Woodard. Good to see you. Hi, Debbie Saviano from Texas and Florida. That is incredible teleportation. I want us to practice that together later. Hi, Chloe in Scotland. Hey, Chloe, I have a neighbor of yours in Yorkshire. So we're going to talk about Georgian era royalty. We're going to talk about those shows with the people with the hats. It'll be fun. Catherine Curzon joins us. So my mom, hello. And my father, hello, Kitty. I know. And she is so eager to insert herself in this show. Some bad things are going to happen. So as I said, I have so much luck. I have Catherine Curzon, who's an 18th century historian with all kinds of expertise in royalty and Georgian era life and death. I have a cat right here. And I have Yolanda Johnson, Young, who is, we're going to talk about mental health. We're going to talk about filmmaking. She made a movie about her son's suicide called Finding Elijah, and we're going to talk all about that. So there's a lot to pick up. Author Len Joy joins us today. Oh my golly, what a day it is. And there's already been one feline alert. There's guaranteed to be another because she's stuck to the side of my arm right now.
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. Welcoming you to The Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Kerry Gorgone, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
Beauty expert and PR wizard Jane Morehouse joins us as well. Hi, Jane. Good to see you. I'm going to do a couple quick ads so I don't forget. I'm just trying to do some now and some later. If you want the podcast version, you can get it anywhere you can hear a podcast. We're hosted on Castos, CASTOS.com, and you can get your own hosting there if you want. This show is hosted on StreamYard, cbrogan.me/StreamYard. That's what allows me to connect all the places I do, like Twitch and YouTube and Facebook and LinkedIn usually, but not today for some weird reason, and Twitter, probably something I did. And let's see, I'll do the third out of the four. No, I'll just do the two. All right. I'm going to start with Catherine Curzon today. We're going to talk all kinds of fun things about kings and queens and everything in between and whatever else I need to know and what it's like to be dealing with the whole land of period time. So Catherine Curzon, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hello.
So you are in high demand these days, or has it been always? Does it feels like there's never not going to be some kind of period television, period movie stuff, and we cannot get enough of royals, you know, sneaking around behind the backs of other royals and that sort of a thing. Is that, when you were little, was that like, this is what I'm going to do, I'm going to grow up and I'm going to study this, or how did you fall into this world?
No, I've got a degree and a master's, and they're in film studies, and I actually specialized in 1960s British horror films, you know, like Hammer Horror, basically. And I've kinds of jobs. I worked at the House of Commons for several years, then I worked in marketing. But when I was really little, I used to spend a lot of time with my granddad, and he lived out in this little cottage right on the edge of Sherwood Forest, literally the middle of nowhere. And he was like a born storyteller. And he'd tell you stories about, like, you know, Dick Turpin. And when I was about five, he told me about Marie Antoinette getting guillotined. And I was just absolutely entranced. And nowadays, you'd probably, you know, get educational psychologist in. But every picture I drew kind of like had a ball gown with no head attached. So
right,
I would just
can I back that up? Did you say five?
Yeah,
that's when he decided, you know what I'd like to tell you about today? Someone's head looping their shoulders.
Okay, exactly. And he'd tell it really gorily as well, you know, about the head in the basket and all this. So it's just always been, it's been a hobby, but not an academic interest. And then I've just always been really passionate. And about, what year are we in, 2021? About eight sure. years ago, I think my husband just got tired of me telling him like exciting facts about the 18th century. So I started a website about it, and that's how my it becoming my career began.
So that's interesting to me, being someone who is known for, you know, blogging and all that. My background was, you know, that weird guy who blogged. And so you're a woman who said, I'm into it. I'm just going to put up some stuff. And next thing you know, people really start coming for it.
Yeah.
So you have been consulted on so many pieces now at this point. Is it old hat, or every time the phone rings, you go, here's another? Like, what do you feel like when this comes?
I absolutely love it. I mean, to be able to do this for a living, you know, to so many people dream of being able to write for a living. And I certainly, that was my dream. And now that's what I do. So every time the phone rings, it's something completely different. So I recently did some consultation for someone on hairstyles for the Regency era. I'm doing some stuff at the moment on, you know, Bridgerton that's been all over Netflix.
Bridgerton, yep.
Yeah, Bridgerton is massive. And I'm actually, just this morning, I've been talking to someone about a project that's really exciting that's going to be Bridgerton themed. So you never know what the query is going to be. And obviously there's my play that about Pride and Prejudice that's coming out in a couple of months streaming. So it's just, I love it, because it's, even if you're working on a book, which I'm working on a book about Queen Charlotte right now, there's so many other things coming in. So you might spend the morning on the book and then the afternoon down a rabbit hole you never would have imagined when you got out of bed that morning. So I love it. I feel so fortunate.
How many of the questions are kind of big brush stuff, and how many of the questions are like, well, as you know, they all ate two olives a day, and no one's ever known that before, but two olives, they all liked two. Like, how much of it is absolute minutia compared to like very important daily life things?
A lot of the questions I get are quite broad, that people might have read something or they watched something and they just want to know a little bit about, you know, the background to it. And sometimes it's as simple as kind of pointing someone at a really good resource online. But in my books, I try to go into the minutiae a bit more, because the broad stories are, you know, they're entertaining, but it's lovely little stories. So stories about George II's mistress being found naked with a ladder up to a bedroom window and a man without his trousers on climbing it and things like that. It was her lover, by the way. So it's these little minutiae that you can find in letters, in newspapers, and they really illuminate that it's not just, you know, crowns and pomp and circumstance, but that it was actually quite grubby and saucy behind the scenes. And that's where I really like to drill down and say, what were they like behind these, like you see on the cover of the book, these grand portraits? Who were these men really?
That's right. You know, so on the one hand, there's this massive assortment of things to sort of maintain a facade. And on the other hand, I really enjoy quite that you have posts like this that are talking about the commercial dandy who is a quack specialist in sexual health, certainly seems to get on well with his glamorous patients. But those were the times, you know, to put a little titter in everybody, that someone would come and say, oh, you have some such and such, and they'd have some kind of sex toy and use it to you know, disavow them of their problems or whatever. It was like crazy stuff going on there.
Oh, and yeah, there was a really popular attraction, was the celestial bed. There was essentially an electrified bed that you would get in with your loved one and they would run a current through it. This was towards, you know, the later part of the 19th century. They would run a current through it that was supposed to provide enormous sexual stimulation. And it became, you know, cost a heck of a lot of money to use it. It became a really big deal for people. So it's sort of like the flip side, if you like, of Jane Austen.
Yeah, well, right. I mean, we're all waiting for, does Mr. Darcy love her or not? And on the other hand, here's a big vibrator bed.
Yeah, so exactly. It's celestial bed.
Got a little of everything going on here. when people create these pieces like Bridgerton and that sort of thing, there have to be points where they just don't want you to be right anymore. Do you have moments like that where they're just like, I know what you're saying. I get it. I'm going to veer from this because it doesn't serve me.
Yeah, you do. And obviously I write fiction as well. And I absolutely understand that when you're writing fiction, you've got a story to tell. And it's something my husband and I, when we watch something together, I try to watch historical fiction as just a viewer, as opposed to a historian, whereas he's like, is that right? But yeah, ultimately you can probably look at a lot of things and go, well, that's wrong and that's wrong and that's wrong. But it's a creative process, isn't it? So I've eased up on it a lot. I used to be a lot more picky about everything when I was younger, but I've eased up as I've got older.
Just makes me think of comic book nerds in a whole other world. You know, well, actually, that's not how Superman would do that. And
exactly.
You did 60s horror. You were like, that's not how that worked.
Yeah, exactly.
So carrying on with some of the writing going on around there, we also have, you know, we come into the Second World War, I guess. We get as high up as a Spitfire. So tell me a little bit about this project.
I write with a friend, Eleanor, and we write fiction together. All my nonfiction is solo, but fiction is together. And we've written quite a few books, and this is the latest. It's just out from Orion, and we just had some exciting news from them regarding future projects, but I can't announce it yet. It's super exciting. And we're both really into history. We met because she writes nonfiction history too. And we're really good friends, and yeah, we wanted to write a World War II adventure because I'm an aviation nut. I love planes. She loves her 1940s fashions, and we're both really into the entertainment of that time. And just, you know, when you just feel like a pull towards part of time or something that really grabs you, we're both like that about the 1940s. So yeah, we wrote this, and Orion loved it happily, and they've published it, and it's fantastic to see it out there because, you know, I'm sure you know it's great to have another string to your bow and to always be growing and always be able to offer something new.
No question. And, you know, British aviation was really at its peak at that moment, and there was a lot to be said. I only recently watched the film Hurricane, which chronicles the Polish aviators coming to lend their hand. And they didn't quite get a good reception by the British aviators because, of course, we wanted to be very, you know, countrymen and all, and we wouldn't want somebody from Poland helping us. But the success rate of the Polish guys was crazy.
Amazing.
They weren't exactly following, you know, British model. So when you get to a project like a consult for a Bridgerton or something like that, I have the question, now that you have fiction on one side and you have nonfiction on the other, do you need both? Does your belly say, let's just get out of this for a minute? You know, Kat's talking about Hooray for Passion collaborations. Is it great to start doing some work with Eleanor? Or do you midway through go, oh, I just can't, I just have to like go look up some facts instead and call these people back and then send them an invoice? You know, like, how does that work? How do you kind of bridge the both of you?
Well, I should say I don't consult on Bridgerton. I'm consulting about a project that's related to Bridgerton.
So okay.
It's not an official collaboration about Bridgerton, yeah.
Got it.
But no, not at all, because I work on my nonfiction in the day. That's my day job. And I work with Eleanor on the fiction in the evenings and at weekends. So it's like a hobby, but it's also a job, if that makes any sense. But they're very much separate. But the good thing is, because obviously we're writing fiction set in the 1940s, there's research involved in that anyway. So the skills are really complementary, which is great. Because, you know, we have access and we understand how to use archives and different research methods. And that informs the fiction too. But the one thing I will say is that there's times when you've done a lot of research into something, and in your first draft, it's all there on the page in the fiction. And then you end up with almost, you know, people don't really want a Spitfire manual in the middle of their fiction. So it's that thing about killing what you have to take out, the stuff that you've spent ages researching. But it's important that you know it, but you almost want to go, like, I know all this. I spent ages on this. People sitting on a hard drive somewhere instead.
Well, you know, I feel like there's an option that you could do some of that. I mean, good old Tom Clancy seemed to explain everything in his goofy books. Like he would explain a wristwatch if he, you know, wanted to use eight pages. Be like, quit it. But I find that fun. I find that on the one hand that you can go and look at what one needs to know for a Spitfire. I always probably want to know those anecdotal stories of like how a pilot would say, well, it always said this in the manual, but if you didn't do this, you were damned and all that. versus, you know, poring through historical things and finding, you know, pictures of old maids keeping cats happy. I think this picture should be burned is what I think. But, you know, that's, you know, that's the censorship in me saying, I don't think we should have a nice old maid with a lot of cats. But is that like maybe an example of one of the first cat ladies? You know, we always make that example of the person who doesn't find their ideal significant other and they're going to be in a house with 15 cats. Maybe that's like the first historical reference.
We're very familiar with the concept of cat ladies. There's quite a famous cartoon, which is old maids attending a cat's funeral. And it's a long procession of old ladies. And the one at the front is carrying a cat wrapped in a burial shroud. And it's, yeah, it's one of the first things I've come across. I mean, I'm not expert in the eras prior to that, but it's one of the first thing I've come across. We've gone, oh, that's that, you know, crazy cat lady stereotype. I mean, I'm a crazy dog lady, but we've got a cat and a dog, but yeah, it is. And they were, I mean, the thing about the Georgians, as you can see from those caricatures, they were absolutely savage. So they would,
it's, truly, you know, today,
the press try to be, the press have, can only be savage to a certain degree. But then the press were utterly savage and they would just take such delight in absolutely wringing people out. And, you know, the bigger, the better, that, as they say, the bigger they come, the harder they fall. So people like the Prince Regent, they just absolutely excoriated them day after day in the press. And they, those wonderful caricatures, you know, the Prince Regent's caricature with this enormous bottom and just things that today you just would never get put into print in a national newspaper. You know?
They are quite obsessed with enormous bottoms, I noticed.
They really do like an enormous bottom.
I was going to put out this early version of Megan the Stallion here. That's quite the rump. And I guess it's useful on rainy days.
Yes, she's wearing a cork rump, which is like a false bottom that you put in your dress. A cork rump.
Uh-huh. So... This is the prior to their being able to do plastic surgery on one's lower extremities. They would just throw a cork one on.
Yeah,
probably more useful in a way because then they could take it off when they need to as well.
Precisely. When fashions change, you can just shrink it or grab it.
I'm pulling all that from madamegilflirt.com, and you most definitely need to follow Catherine on her Instagram. There's a lot of treasure snuck over there. If you're more of a Twitter person like me, you can go to Madame Gilflirt there as well. Catherine, I'm going to bring you backstage if you don't mind. We do a little bit of a panel at the end, so if you could stick around, please do. But I'm going to stick you backstage for the minute. Thanks so much for being part of it so far. Here we go.
Thank you.
Boop. Nope, mid-sentence. I only do it mid-sentence. I wish I could have done it mid-drink. I'm going to grab my other new friend, Yolanda. They're learning such a lot about me today. They're learning, you know, maybe they shouldn't have said yes. I don't know. Authors, if you haven't built a website for yourself, you know, I mean, Catherine's already ahead of the game, but if you haven't built a website for yourself, do it really quick. Pub-site.com. So easy. You can throw one together in a couple hours. It'll be just fine. If you need to make a new website real fast, though, grab a .online domain. There's so many available. Although, as Carrie would love to point out, your mom is .online has already been sold. So .online, you can go to cbrogan.me/online. You could use the code Chris all caps and get one for 99 centavos, people of Earth. You could do it. All right. I'm going to grab Yolanda and we're going to talk about filmmaking and some pretty heavy stuff. We're going to talk about mental health and all that. Yolanda Johnson Young, thanks so much for joining in and being part of the show with me today.
Hello.
This is one of your first interviews. You haven't been dragged out there yet, so I'm warming you up for the big press tour that comes with being a very successful filmmaker, is what I'm hoping.
Thank you.
Get you warmed up. So we have to start by acknowledging the rough part of the story first. You made a film because your son Elijah took his own life.
Yes.
And
2017.
Can we start there by saying what the hell? Like,
yeah,
you're supposed to grieve.
I'm still saying what the hell.
Right. Well, yeah, you are. But you're supposed to grieve. You're supposed to, you know, hide it all inside, not talk about it, whatever. Feel embarrassed about it. Feel bad. All those things. And you said, you know what I think I'll do? I think I'll make a film.
Yes, I held up.
Exactly right.
We're not doing all that. You know, I think that part of the reason for me doing the film was the shame and embarrassment and the pain that I was going through. And it was like, wait a minute, if this can happen to me, it can happen to anyone. So let me just share my story so that someone might see a little bit of themselves or one of their family members and say, wait a minute, hold on, you know, let's do something different, you know? So yeah, it was healing. It was also healing for me.
Everybody says the same thing, which is we didn't know. You know, we know things were bad. We know he's been having his issues. He's always had his issues. That's part of who he is. We didn't know. I deal with clinical depression, by the way. So to make it, you know, easier, I deal with some of this and suicidal ideation, not as much anymore. But when I was younger, because, oh, my gosh, is that a young person's challenge? I was a lot more interested in that, you know, which is a weird sentence, but it's accurate, you know. You're deciding to put it in a movie, though, brings a voice to it where a lot of people now have a chance to take a look at it. I want to see if I can throw the 30-second trailer on real quick and have people take a look. Is that okay with you?
Sure thing.
All right. Okay. Let me hit a button, hit another button.
It was just fun. You know, here's my July 4th baby. It's trying to navigate through the loss of someone by suicide. You know, you're just lost. What advice would you give a young Black man? I mean, what would you tell them?
You know, it always starts with, it's okay, right? It's okay. It's okay to feel.
All right, so I have 8 million questions because that was like a pretty short trailer. I would have gone for a couple minutes more if I could. Who did you interview? Who comes out there?
A little more backstory. Elijah was actually a college student studying film at the Art Institute in Philadelphia. And I guess when it happened, it just broke something open in me, you know? And I was like, well, wait a minute. Nobody's going to get to know him. Nobody's going to get to know how cool he was. He's not going to make movies. So I said, well, you know, I'm going to use his original art, his writings, his photographs, his videos to help tell the story, to give him a voice, you know? And I decided to include two Black mental health professionals because I'm like, well, maybe he didn't see where there was a place for him, a safe place for him to go and get the help that he needed. So I said, well, maybe if I put that in my film, representation is everything, you know? Absolutely. So I was just really, really hoping to try not to get upset here, but I was really just trying to share my son, number one, and help a family avoid
Cat alert here too.
The cat thing. You know, help another family avoid the tragedy that we went through, and just to show young Black men that it's okay to get the help, because most of the time, the first time they get the help that they need is they're introduced into the criminal system, you know?
Exactly.
So it's like, I just really want everyone to know, because mental health is everybody's problem. It's everybody's problem, because if there's someone who's acting out and not getting the help that they need, it affects everyone. You know, so I just want it to be a little more, just more common. Just go get the help, you know.
I have 1,000 questions, so I'm just going to try to pare it down to 10 or 12. But okay. It's crazy. So Elijah has siblings.
Yes.
Do they say to you, Mom, don't do this? Do they say to you, Mama, this is so cool? Like, how did that happen?
Well, the only child who is in the film is the younger son, Benjamin. Mm-hmm. His two older brothers didn't want to interview. His dad didn't want to interview. They still haven't seen the film, and it's okay, because sure. My therapist said to me, everyone heals at their own pace. You know, my almost 30-year-old son has been hinting at, Mom, I might be ready to watch it. I'm not sure yet. Let me think about it, but I think I might want to watch it soon. I said, when you're ready, it's there. It will be there, you know, so...
Yeah. There's a, you said this, you said, I want to make sure that the people know what Elijah was going to do and what he was going to bring and all the things he had in his head and all this incredible art. This film is not a long film. It's a 20 something minute film. So that's not what this film's about.
No.
Meaning there's a few things you'll learn. One is that maybe you still make more of that. You make some, this is Elijah's work,
yeah.
But What does this film do for someone when they watch it? If I'm coming to sit to it, am I coming to learn about your boy? Am I coming to learn that maybe I have a chance? You know, maybe I don't have to take that choice. Like, what do I need to do once I've acquired this 20-something minutes of wisdom?
Those are good points. What I want people to walk away with, number one, knowing that you're okay. And it's okay to feel all of the things, all of the feelings that you're feeling, it's okay to feel those. It's also okay to seek help if you feel that it doesn't feel right, you know? If you're having troubles or struggles with daily life, it's okay to get the help. It's okay to get the help. You know, I had never heard of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. I think Elijah passed in June of 2017. And I think by August, I kept hearing this song, everybody, Logic, you know, and I'm like, what is this song? What is that number? You know, and then when I researched, I said, well, my gosh, you know, and I found the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. I've been participating in their Out of the Darkness community walks where they raise funds and awareness for suicide prevention every year. I've also linked up with them as an advocate where if there is a piece of legislation going through Congress or the House or whatever that needs signatures and needs to pass, I will support that and write a letter to my legislators, you know? So it's like, you never know what, how the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention can help you. You just don't wake up in the morning and say, oh, let me see what's going on their website. You know, it's until something happens or you have that need, but it's been a wealth of knowledge for me and it's helped me become more knowledgeable. You know, the first thing I like to teach people is, we don't say committed. We always say died by suicide.
Died by suicide.
Yeah, because that committed just gives such a negative connotation to it. Yes, it is a bad thing that happened, but we don't need to further it being in that negative space by saying committed. So we try to say died by suicide.
So I'm not trying to be funny when I ask this question, but took his own life. Is that also on the outs? Like,
are we not supposed to? That's okay. It's just that word committed, you know, it just brings so many negative connotations, you know?
Well, because you could be committed to a home. You could be, you know, committed into incarceration. There's a lot of negatives. Like you said, there's so many more cases, especially if someone's a person of color, where they're going to sort this through the criminal system and not the psychological system, and that's something you're pointing out. Yolanda, does this mean you need to make more films? Because I feel like it means you need to make more films.
Well, yeah, I am. You know, I have a pretty interesting background myself when I was, I know this is probably on another show.
I want to hear it. Let's go.
When I was 9 years old, my mom married someone in federal witness protection. So we moved from Philly to New York to New Jersey to Virginia to San Francisco, you know, so I'm working on that now, trying to really piece that together because I hadn't spoken about it with my friends. And, you know, I'm going back over the years and asking, like, did I ever tell you? They're like, what? I'm like, I never told you. They're like, no. I'm like, see, that's part of the secrecy and isolation. I just never spoke about it. You know, it was nothing, no reason to speak about it. But at this point, I'm digging a little bit deeper and I'm like, I'm not the only one that this happened to. You know, so, and it's not like I can put something on Facebook or Craigslist like, hey, were you in federal witness protection? Let's make a movie. So I'll just do mine and they'll find me, as much like finding Elijah. You know, I've come across a lot of people who have been dealing with a lot of mental things, their children, some people who've lost their children. It's, at first it was very overwhelming, you know, to receive all of that pain. Right. From people, but I've started to just be able, well, number one, I don't watch the film when I do screenings. I don't watch the film anymore. I wait until the film is over and then I'll join the Q&A. It's just really hard for me to continue watching it over and over, you know, although the story, the film leaves you with a sense of hope, you know, it's still my personal story. So it's a little difficult for me to watch it sometimes.
So you give screenings for groups. Is there a streaming version of this now that we're all in the land of plague?
Well, right now I am just getting all of this. You know, this film for me wasn't I'm a non-traditional filmmaker, so I didn't go through film school. Okay, you make your film, you make your money. You know, that's not why I made Finding Elijah. So at this point, still, you know, I'm committed. I am committed. I'll use it in this way. I'm committed to seeing this from beginning to end. You know, I started it and I want to go through all of the steps. And it just so happens at the end of when you make a film, you do distribution. So self-distribution is a whole beast. It's a whole beast. So I'm working that out right now. So it's still in film festivals. So once it finishes on the film festival circuit, I'll be more inclined to do something on my own. So I'm still working all of that out. If you have any ideas or if anyone knows, you know, or would like to help out, just hit me up.
Listen, I'll give you my email address afterwards. I've got a friend who just did a whole bunch of documentary films and it's out there right now in the circuit. Slightly different topic, but I'm sure he'll be able to help out. At least know a few places to point you in. So that'd be good. And he did a bunch of online screenings and all that sort of a thing. Okay. So I hinted at this, you know, you got to make a bunch more films. So that wasn't you before though. I mean, that you weren't sitting around going, can't wait to make some more films. You got a lot of other business going on. You're doing a lot of mental health advocacy now. And before the worst of it with Elijah, you probably had a pretty busy plate as well. So where are you today?
Right now I still have one in the pen here. 13, it'll be 13 next month. So, you know, all boys. So just working that out with him, you know, because the life of a single mom to a tween boy is extremely, it's busy, filled with everything, you know, cooking, cleaning, taking him here and buying him this and, you know, so that's one thing. And I don't know if you saw my cats they're having an MMA match right now. So they're all over everything, the TV stand, just jumping all over the place. But, you know, hopefully I don't turn into that cat lady.
I can't see that in your future. So 13. So yeah. 13. That's big. That's a big age.
April 15th. He's a tax day baby.
Nice.
Yeah. Most of my kids were on holidays, like tax day, May Day, Memorial
Day.
July 4th. Yeah.
Man, you have good aim, Yolanda. Tell me, you said a lot about Elijah's art, and I want to take a minute for that because I want to know what was that young man doing? What kind of work was he doing? And how did he express himself?
Okay, well, you know, all the rage is the games. Everybody wants to do the games. So I'd convinced him that you could be a game developer. You know, you
can. Yes.
Games, you know, so he went straight from high school to college, dean's list, honor roll, game design, digital production, digital film production. So I was really proud of him, you know. He just had some things going on. He'd spoken to me briefly when he was close to 18 about it. And I said, well, you know, you can always, you know, get some help. He's like, oh, I don't know. I said, listen, I said, you don't have to get pumped full of medicine. You know, you can do psychotherapy. I'm a big believer in therapy. You know, I lost a child in 1989 from SIDS. So that was my only girl, too. So it took a very long time for me to realize, okay, get into therapy, get it together. You know, so when he approached me with it, I explained to him, I said, you don't have to be a zombie on medicine. You can just do talking, you know. And he's like, oh, I'll think about it. And he never wanted to do it. You know, I said, I'll just call him and say, look, my mom can speak, you know. And he said, I'm not sure. But, lost my train of thought. But
That's okay. I was just saying, you know, what kind of work was he making? You said games, and then you said that in the midst of it, he was also dealing with his worst time.
So he stopped going to school. And I quit my job like less than a month later. I was like, something's wrong. I have to like stay home.
You knew.
You know, I knew something was wrong. And then he stopped speaking for like 5 months. All of my girlfriends were like, well, what are you going to do? He wouldn't be doing that. I said, he's not disrespectful. If I text him, I hear him moving around and he's at the door ready to go to the store. If I call, he'll pick up the phone and listen, you know, so it's not like he's not communicating. He's just nonverbal, which now I understand is a form of anxiety. I didn't know that then, you know, but I know it now. you know. But once he started speaking again, I say in the film, I'm like, I was so excited. But then a month later, he jetted. You know, he was missing for almost a year before he died by suicide in New York.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
So it was a lot going on. You know, we didn't know where he was.
That's huge.
Look, that's went to Russia. He went to Russia. He traveled to Russia.
Oh, like you do.
You know, what in the world? He got a job. He made almost $20,000 in like 4 months in New York City. I'm like, my son never had a job. He was still my baby. You know, he was 19 when he left home and 20 when he passed away. He was just shy of his 21st birthday.
So much ahead. So much ahead still. He clearly seemed to have some things he needed to get out. He had some expression he had to do that wasn't in his art, or that he just wasn't having any kind of way to get done. How did you express you? You know, you handled this different. You picked some different things, and that's not judgment, you know, but how did you handle you?
I knew that I couldn't walk around with that on the inside. I wouldn't be this person I am right now if I had walked around just holding that in, just hiding it and holding it and holding it and holding it. I couldn't do that. I had to let that out.
Yeah.
You know? And I really, really felt it was very important to use his writing and his artwork. His photography, and I have to put it in there because this is helping to tell his story. You know, I wanted to give him a voice, give him a chance to make that film, you know.
There's a lot in there, Yolanda. I am going to grab our other friend Catherine back, and we'll ask a couple questions back and forth. Sure. But oof, that's it. That's your only word. You just get oof. But that's thank big. You. Thank you. Oh, my gosh. Can you let me make you bigger just for a second? Can you show off your cool shirt? Black Healing Matters.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Philip J. Roundtree is one of the therapists that I use in the film, and this is from his.
That's from his?
Yeah.
Is that the handsome gentleman in the 30-second trailer with the beard?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's wearing the same shirt, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Just checking. I noted him, but I didn't know who he was. Okay. All right. I'm going to grab Catherine real quick.
Okay, cool.
Hi, Catherine.
Hello.
So we've covered the gamut. You know, we've covered weird Georgian people. and celestial beds. That's a term I'll remember for all of my life.
Right.
And you know, we've talked about some really tricky, tough stuff. You are both though expressing yourselves. You're both out there making words and pictures and whatever to cover your feelings, your thoughts, your desires, and your passions. How do you help people here? There's some people here who haven't worked on their project because they think it's probably dumb. Their project's dumb. No one's going to pay attention. What do you say, Catherine? Start with you.
It's never dumb. I feel so strongly about it. You know, just listen to Yolanda speaking about her film and her son. It's such a, whatever your thing is, whether it's something like that or something, you know, completely fictional, it's such a pure expression of you and something inside of you. And I'm sure we've all had through life that moment where you think no one's going to care about this. This is, you know, people are going to laugh or they're going to go, oh, you know. No. And if people do that, there are some people out there that are just that way, but it's such a pure expression. Just do it. I know it's easy for me to say, but honestly, just do it. Because I used to be such a nervous, anxious person. And when you let it out, it's like a dam going, do you know what I mean?
Yolanda, people are afraid to admit to even their coworkers that they deal with depression. They're afraid to say, you know, sometimes I think of maybe it would all be better if I just wasn't here anymore. Mm. They don't say that to another soul, Yolanda. And they've got creative stories that they want to tell. They've got stuff that they're holding on to, but it's locked on that other side of that door. What's the advice? What do we say?
Write it down, get it out, let it out. holding it in may be more hurtful than letting it out. You know, release it. Absolutely release that. You know, because once you do that, you'll find you have your own tribe. There is a tribe that will support you. You know, they will support you. I firmly believe that.
Yeah.
It's big stuff. So I just went searching around and I found something. I want to see which one of you might be able to identify this. 50-50 could be either of you. Does that look like anything?
Is that a Spitfire cockpit?
It's a Spitfire instrument panel, yeah.
I know, because we had
one of those two.
We had one for reference when we were writing the book, that Eleanor and I, if we needed to know where something was for the character pressing something, we'd be like, go and look at the diagram.
I thought there's gonna be a moment where you've had to put your hands all over that kind of information a bunch of times in a row.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I had a friend, Robin, who worked for a very long time at Delta, and he had flown airplanes from the Vietnam War until modern time. And he gave me the one and only piece of advice I had in an airplane. Because, you know, we all see the movies that, like, any old person can wander into the cockpit and land the plane, which is such bullocks. But, you know, that's what we're told. He said, here's my best advice I give all my pilots. If the button looks really worn down, then that is an important button and you should use it. If the button's shiny and it looks like it came out of the box, don't touch it ever. Seems like good thing in life. By the way, I didn't even think to post this up, but the, you know, suicide prevention hotline is probably a good number to keep throwing up as we were talking about that. So way after the fact, if someone's still here and wants to even get a phone call in and talk to people, I've called. It's different than what you think, but it sure is helpful. So people are there to help. All right. I have one last question that we asked. I realized I didn't ask you this stuff ahead of time. I don't think I told you anything about the end of the show. I was just too much into learning about you and, you know, enjoying you both. So you don't, like, the whole ending of this show is like a mystery to you. So we have one question we ask every single guest. So everybody from Sir Mix-a-Lot, who is, you know, a royalty, so Catherine should know him. to five-time world beatboxing champion Butterscotch, what goes in your backpack? Now, your backpack is the world is shifting. Everything's crazy. We don't know what's next. You can't take everything with you, but you could take either one physical or one metaphorical thing. So physical could be an avocado, or metaphorical, it could be resilience or hope or something like that. So you could put just one thing in there. Yolanda Johnson Young, I'll go with you first. What goes in the backpack?
That's definitely hope goes in the backpack.
Hope it is.
Hope goes in my backpack.
That's a big one. Catherine Curzon, it could be anything. What goes in that backpack?
Well, you already said it, but I made a note so I didn't forget before you said it. It's resilience.
Yes.
I thought about other humility, generosity, but I think they're things, compassion, we should all have those anyway. Whereas resilience is quite, I think it's a hard one to get sometimes.
I think it's a deal. Debbie from Women's Leadership Live says, amazing women, Yolanda and Catherine. It's an honor to meet you both here via my old stupid head. I realized that also I didn't do another part of the show that I do every single week. Man, Carrie's just going to smack me around for not having this all handled. Hang on.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
So for person of the day, I think I'm going to go with Catch Matt, whoever that is. That's my ex-wife who tunes into the show and is wonderful. And is an incredible mental health advocate as well. So, does some incredible stuff. So, and see, here's her comment. Hope and resilience are a great combo to move forward. So there you go. Person of the day. That entitles you to one free apple. You just have to go to the store and buy it yourself. Those are pretty good. And then I forgot to tell you that the historical way that we end the show is we talk all about my grandmother. My grandmother did watch a lot of those kind of royalty-based shows back in the way old days, back when they were still like real time. It was, my grandmother watched them in the Georgian era. So she found that you know, some of her neighbors were in them, and so she might as well keep them. She did love that sort of a thing. And I think she was a very strong woman in her own right, and someone who's really into mental health advocacy for sure. So I'll put that one out to her.